Well, I'd like to get started because it's getting late. It's 22:01 hours. Wow, 22:01 hours. It's February 16th, 2024 of the Common Era, 2201 hours Eastern Standard Time. It's late tonight. I just had a very late sleep. I didn't get to bed until 2 in the afternoon, and I was up all the previous night, and I'm feeling so healthy that I can stay up that long without apparently seeming to have any bad effects other than sleep deprivation. But, I mean, we'll have to, I mean, I'm taking all my vitamins and my, you know, the omegas, the elements like iodine, everything has got to be in place to get the body to work. But we're going to go, I didn't select a scripture yet, is it Proverbs? Yeah, I think we're switching over today, so whatever it was Ecclesiastes, wasn't it? 4 and 15 yesterday, so we're going to select a proverb. Maybe we should do that later, or maybe do it now, we'll do it now. I'm just drawn to 17, we'll go right here. Okay, look at this is kind of good. 17:6, I don't know if it works yet. Hang on. Maybe not. Let's see. 17:6. And we have the 16th. Let's see. 5. Seventeen and six. Yeah, it works. 23 and 2 is 25. That's beautiful. 17 and 6. That's today's. What have I done? Oh, here it is. Yeah. Yeah, it's going to be a tough study today because there's a lot to cover and I haven't had time to prepare it yet, but I know I've seen this material, at least much of it, before. And we have an important chronological piece of information today. But first of all, let's go and look at our article. We need to resize this so we can read it. That should do it right about there. And then scroll down again. This article is not formatted for a narrow screen or a small width, so it works better on a wider screen. But I may want to fix that and change the formatting of the article, but I haven't considered the details of that. So here we are in our article, Crucible of Credible Creed, Chapter 6, Paragraph 7. We finished the Arabian tradition. And we saw, didn't we, that there was an incredible correlation and a perfect alignment, perfect evidence, independent evidence from the Arabian tradition that confirmed our genealogy as being true as to who the Pharaoh of the Exodus was, absolutely. And it's even consistent with the Pharaoh of Joseph's time having been Amenemhat III. So we have a complete confirmation from the Arabian tradition. Seemingly, anyway. I mean, there's no contradiction, and it looks... It's so exciting to confirm something independently, because the Arabian tradition has nothing to do with the Egyptian chronology. They don't have anything to do with each other. They don't communicate with each other. There's no dependence of one upon the other, and neither does the Arabian tradition depend upon the Bible, other than... to a minor extent, and certainly they knew nothing of the genealogy, which was something that I created personally with Jehovah's help and Jesus' help, of course. Moses' fight with the Nubians in the south is another tradition or another story that we have about Moses that is it's under the rind. Okay, it's not under the rind mathematical papyrus that we see this, but this is another thing about Moses, so let's just read it. It's a tradition about Moses, his fight with the Nubians in the south. That's the tradition. Now, we're writing this and saying it appears to mean he must have been a general of the southern troops of Amos I, which is a strange thing to say because he was born, adopted by the Northern Kingdom, whose ruler was Apophis. But if he was a ruler, okay, it says, I wrote this, he must have been a general of the southern troops of Amos I, it appears, who ruled southern Egypt from 1550 BCE, and that date we really believe is quite close to the truth. Amos I, a preteen at that time, like 10 years old, when Moses himself would have been 22 years old. Amos I ruled until 1525 BCE, about 25 years, in other words, when Moses was in Midian, or from 1551, or late 1552, to 1526, when Amenhotep the first began to rule, and he ruled for 21 years until 1504, and then the 11 years of Thutmose I until 1493 BCE. After the death of Apophis in 1543, the only reason we have that date is because we backwards calculate from 1532, 11 years, Camuti became the pharaoh of the north at that time, and he was the one whose year 11 was mentioned in the Rhind, mathematical papyrus. The Rhind mathematical papyrus is referred to in this paragraph and in the footnote. And Moses, at this time, at the time of 1543 BCE, had attained the age of 29 years old. At the time of the Hyksos expulsion in 1532 BCE, seeing as Apophis died in 1543 BCE, so Apophis had already died. So Moses may have been living in the south at this time. This is what I wrote. It's quite intriguing. I don't know, but I got this impression because Moses has a tradition. There's a tradition of him fighting in the army in the very south of Egypt, in Nubia, which is to the south of Egypt. And Moses may have commanded the army that battled against the Hyksos, because he was a part, if he was a part of the southern army of Egypt, he may have been part of the army that fought against the northern kingdom, which was ruled by the Hyksos. And Moses may have fought against that kingdom after his father, his adoptive father, Apophis, his adoptive grandfather, really. The thing, oh, I know why. Right. Because the daughter of Apophis, there's an artifact of hers that was found in one of the graves in the southern kingdom. So it looks like, and she was his adoptive mother, Heret, the daughter of Apophis. So this is why I thought Moses could have been, when she married a king in the south, which is what it appears, then he may have become part of the army of the south at some point. And this is perfectly amazing, isn't it? And then he overthrew the Hyksos in the north while he was serving in the army in the south. It's just incredible. It's unbelievably exciting to think about knowing this. And it's neatly proven by the Rhind mathematical papyrus of Thebes, Egypt. Now, proven in a very, very, open sense. Proven in the sense, in a very liberal sense. Yeah, a very, very liberal sense of proving something. Where it actually does provide, it's got some very, very powerful evidence, but it's far from being rigorous proof, you know. For more about Moses, we must apply to the chapter on him. There is a chapter about Moses. Yet, it is in this article, we have a chapter, I think it's chapter 7, is it later? Wait, chapter 7 would be the next, I don't know if it's chapter 7, is it, really? No, it's Abraham. No, Moses is quite a bit later. I'm not sure where the article, the chapter on Moses is right now, but we'll come to it. I think it's one of the. I think it's in the second part two of the article, actually, but I'm not sure. So we're not even finished chapter 6 yet, but this is incredible, is it not? It's just it's so exciting. And yet, I mean, proof in the very, what's the word? There's a word, generous sense of proven, right? If we give it generosity, then the Rhine Mathematical Papyrus may be the proof that Moses did all these things. It's really, really powerful if we look at it this way, because there's a lot of little clues that show that the Rhine Mathematical Papyrus, which was originally written in the time of Amenemhat III, who we said in one of the articles, Joseph or Joseph and on, it looks like Amenhotep III may have been one of the sons of Joseph even. We have very little proof of that either, but it's just that there's evidence of it. For more about Moses, we must apply to the chapter on him. If there was, I mean, there's a lot of little clues that show us that this is possible. So Apophis was the Pharaoh who did not know Joseph. In other words, he didn't know that Joseph had ruled Egypt either. Yet it is, which is what the Bible says, he was the second in the kingdom, but he really ruled all of Egypt in the time of Amenemhat the second in this chronology that we have. And it works perfectly in our chronology. Yet it is clear that a document found at and also in the Egyptian chronology it works perfectly too, although there are alternative Egyptian chronologies, but ours is a very moderate middle chronology. It's not pushing the dates too low or too high or anything. It's a very, very reasonable chronology, even the one of the Egyptian chronology that we're using to confirm the Bible chronology is very liberal, I mean very conservative, very middle of the road, the middle ground. It's not the high or low chronology. It's very middle chronology. Yet it is clear a document found at Luxor, Thebes is remarkable in referring to the events, and this is the Rhine Mathematical Papyrus, refers to events in the north during the 33rd year of Pharaoh Apophis. It doesn't say him by name, I don't think, but it's, and then the 11th year of the one who succeeded him. Maybe it does give him, I forget if it gives his name or not, but the one who succeeded him, it doesn't give his name at all, so we have to assume that's Khamuti. And he was defeated by another king whose name was not given, who we have to assume was almost the first. And it all fits beautifully when we assume those things. But this information was obtained from the Rhine Mathematical Papyrus article on Wikipedia. That's where I got that information about the 33rd year. It's taken from other scholars, from scholars. It's taken from scholars who wrote about these things, who wrote about the Rhine Mathematical Papyrus in great detail, you know, or they researched it at great length, and they came up with their own work, and then that was quoted in Wikipedia. So, Proverbs 17 and 6, little children, the crown of old men is the grandsons, and the beauty of sons is their fathers. Right. We talked about Nebuchadnezzar, whose possible descendant was Belshazzar, the son of Nabonidus. Could have been a grandson, or, you know, he actually wasn't, probably not a great-great-grandson or anything that much, because there was only a difference of about 60-some years from the time of year one of Nebuchadnezzar. 40 years? 40 years. No, 60 years. That's right. 604 to 539 is... It's not even 65 years, right? 65 years. 65 years, little children. So that's not much time to have. Certainly, you don't have much more than three generations there in terms of difference. From year one to year one, let's say. But there could be, you know, sometimes four generations and so on. But we know Nebuchadnezzar ruled a long time, 43 years, so he came to the throne quite young, apparently. But let's move on. The crown of old men is the grandsons, and the beauty of sons is their father's little children. That's our proverb for today. First Chronicles 6. We've used a lot of time already. The sons of... We're not going to read all of this because this is a hugely long chapter. And then we want to cover Daniel, which is so exciting today. It's going to be fantastic, this chapter on Daniel. The sons of Levi were Gershon, Kohath, and Merari. Gershon, Kohath, Merari, the sons of Levi. And the sons of Kohath were Amram, Izhar, and Hebron, and Uziel. And the sons of Amram were Aaron and Moses, and there was Miriam. And the sons of Aaron were Nadab. We know Miriam was the sister of Aaron and Moses. And the sons of Aaron and Moses were brothers, and Miriam was their sister, and the sons of Aaron were Nadab and Abihu, Eleazar and Ithamar. As for Eleazar, he became father to Phinehas. Phinehas himself became father to Abishua. Abishua in turn became father to Bucky. Bucky in turn became father to Uzzi. Uzzi in turn became father to Zerahiah. Zerahiah in turn became father to Meraioth. Meraioth himself became father to Amariah. Amariah in turn became father to Ahitub. Ahitub in turn became father to Zadok. Zadok in turn became father to Ahimaaz. This is the priestly line, right? The line of the priests. Nadab, Abihu, Eleazar, and Ithamar, the sons of Aaron. And then Eleazar was the son of Aaron. He became father to Phinehas, and Aaron was the first priest for Israel. Phinehas became father to Abishua. Abishua became father to Bucky. Bucky became father to Uzzi. Uzzi became father to Zerahiah. Zerahiah, in turn, became father to Meraioth. Meraioth became father to Amariah. Amariah became father to Ahitub. Ahitub became father to Zadok. Zadok, father to Ahimaaz. Ahimaaz to Azariah. Azariah to Johanan. Johanan to Azariah. He was the one that acted as priest in the house that Solomon built in Jerusalem. And we don't think that these are necessarily at all a complete list of genealogy either. I don't think there's enough generations there to go from the time. But the reason why we're going to say that, we don't know that it's complete. There may be some parts that are left out because, for example, when the Israelites were in Egypt, there were 400 years in Egypt. 430 years they spent in Egypt and in Canaan from the time when Joseph was appointed second in command of Egypt in BCE 1923 in our chronology. That's 430 years when we don't know anything from those 430 years, virtually nothing. And whether they kept track of all their generations, we're going to find out because when we read on, okay, Azariah became father to Amariah, Amariah became father to Ahitub, and we're very interested in calculating all these generations, how many years per generation, and we're interested in doing all that, and we do all that. We're trying to find out the true chronology also, in addition to finding out who the names of the people were. But we're not going to read all this because I want to get to something else, and I want to have time to talk about it. The sons of... Okay, so Azariah, Sariah keeps on going. And Jehozadak it was that went away when Jehovah took Judah and Jerusalem into exile by the hand of Nebuchadnezzar. Verse 15. That's the list of all the priests that we know about, or virtually all that we know about, but there are other sections in the Bible from which we draw to get information about the genealogies. It's not our main concern to do with chronology, because genealogies are very often lacking in some of the names of the generations. We miss some of the generations, and we can see that in part from what we're going to see later on here in this chapter. The sons of Levi were Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. And these are the names of the sons of Gershom, Libni and Shimei. And the sons of Kohath were Amram and Izhar and Hebron and Uzziel. The sons of Merari were Mahli and Mushi. These were the families of the Levites by their forefathers. Right. Gershom and Kohath. Kohath was the priestly line, was it not? Or was it? I'm trying to think. What was the priestly line? Who was the priestly line? Gershom, Kohath, and Merari. I think that the priestly line was Kohath, wasn't it? Well, we should have seen that from... Yeah, Amram, the sons of Amram. Yeah, the sons of Kohath were Amram, verse 1, or verse 2, rather. Look, the sons of Kohath were Amram. And Amram, being one of the sons of Kohath, was the father of Aaron and Moses. So the Kohath line was the line of the priests. But then there was Gershom and Merari, and they were also Levites, being sons of Levi in verse 16. So we have their descent lines also. They were helpers of the priests. They helped the priests. And in this line... You see this? The sons of Merari and so on. Then it comes back to verse 22, the sons of Kohath, and it comes down to Elkanah, his son, Abiasaph his son, Asher his son, Tahath his son, Uriel his son, Uzziah his son, and Sheol his son, and the sons of Elkanah were Amasai and Ahimoth. As for Elkanah, the sons of Elkanah, he was another son of Elkanah, actually, as we'll see. Sons of Elkanah were Zophai, his son, Nahath, his son, Eliab, his son, Jeroham, his son, Elkanah, his son. Jeroham was the father of Elkanah, who was in 1 Samuel chapter 1 and verse 2. 1 Samuel chapter 1, Elkanah is the father of Samuel, right? And Samuel, Elkanah and his wife Hannah had the son Samuel. And the sons of Samuel were the firstborn Joel and the second Abijah. Okay, so there we go. Now let's carry on. This is important. Just read on here. Verse 33 is the most important thing here. Of the sons of the Kohathites in the time of David, look at this. Heman the singer, the son of Joel. Because these were the ones to whom David in verse 31 gave positions, okay? And of the sons of the Kohathites. Heman the singer, the son of Joel, the son of Samuel, the son of Elkanah, the son of Jeroham, the son of Eliel, the son of Toa, the son of Zuf, the son of Elkanah, the son of Mahath, the son of Amasai, the son of Elkanah, the son of Joel, the son of Azariah, the son of Zephaniah, the son of Tahath, the son of Asir, the son of Abiasaph, the son of Korah, the son of the son of Izhar, the son of Kohath, the son of Levi, the son of Israel. So these are all the way back to Levi. We have the sons of, and he's the son of Jacob, or Israel. He's the son of Israel, as it says. The son of Jacob, who is also called Israel. Levi is the son of Jacob. So we've got all the generations, and when we count them up from Heman, we have before Heman, we have 1, Joel, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, 21, and then 22. 22 generations from Israel, not inclusive either. 22 complete generations from Jacob all the way to Heman, the singer. That's where we know there are missing generations in some of the other chronologies, because from the time of Jacob to the time of David, which is in our chronology, from the birth of Jacob in 2044 BCE to the birth of David in 1088 BCE, 2210 it's about 1,000 years, almost 1,000 years, and we've got 22 generations, so that's about 20 generations would be 50 years per generation. It's under 50 years per generation here, right? But back in the time of Jacob, generations were longer too. But even now we still could have missing generations. Even with these 22 generations, there could be some missing. But this shows us that, you know, if you try to cram 22 generations into a much shorter period of time, you're going to have, and we looked at that, I know I looked at all that, it gets to be too tight, where you've got, your generations are too close together. When you put, let me think now. I mean, some people would cut 200 years off of that. The Jewish tradition cuts off 200 out of the 430 years, completely eliminates it from the time spent in Egypt. But we have a lot of evidence for believing why we believe that Joseph was there in the time 1923 BCE, that 12th dynasty Egypt. There's a lot of evidence why that is correct. So, you know, there can be missing generations, but we still have, this is the best chronology right there. This is the best genealogical, the fullest genealogy right there from the time of Jacob is in 1 Chronicles 6 and 33. From the time of Jacob all the way down to the time of David. Okay, that's the fullest chronology that we have of that time period, or of any time, you know, virtually any time period that's of a comparable length, and you know, or of a comparable number of generations. It's quite an impressive genealogy. Now, in the first year of Belshazzar, the king of Babylon, Daniel chapter 7 now, Daniel himself beheld a dream and visions of his head upon his bed. I'm going to take my hat off here. Let's see. There we go. At that time, he wrote down the dream itself, the complete account of matters he told. It's getting very warm. Daniel was speaking up and saying, I happened to be beholding in my visions during the night, and see there, the four winds of the heavens were stirring up the vast sea, and four huge beasts were coming up out of the sea, each one being different from the others. The first one was like a lion, and it had the wings of an eagle. This prefigures the lion-like Babylonian kingdom, and it had the wings of an eagle. Actually, that Babylon was also referred to as an eagle somewhere. Just as an eagle pounces, Deuteronomy 28 and 49. That was a prophecy from the time of Moses, even, that this eagle-like nation, which turned out to be Babylon, would come along like a lion. And it was lifted up from the earth, in verse 4, and was made, after its wings were plucked out, it was made to stand up on 2 feet just like a man, and there was given to it the heart of a man. And see there another beast, a second one, it being like a bear. That's the conquerors of Babylon, was Medo-Persia. So analogies have been drawn to this kingdom as being Medo-Persia. It was like a bear, and on one side it was raised up, and there were three ribs in its mouth between its teeth. I'm sure there's an analogy to what the three ribs were also. Let's see if we can find that. And this is what they were saying to it: get up, eat much flesh. I think the Revelation Grand Climax, its Grand Climax at Hand book, the book called Revelation, its Grand Climax at Hand, by the Watchtower Bible and Tract Society, talks about this chapter of Daniel also, because it has the wild beast in it, as we're going to see next, coming up after the third beast. There's the fourth beast, and it's like the beast of Revelation, the wild beast. It doesn't mention the three ribs right there, but okay, let's keep going. We can research and find out what those three ribs are in terms of how it was fulfilled, this prophecy, that is. Verse 6, after this I kept on beholding it, and see there another beast, one like a leopard, but it had four wings of a flying creature on its back. This is the Greek kingdom, Greece, Alexander the Great, and the beast had four heads, and we know Alexander's kingdom was split in four parts after him. So this fits Alexander the Kingdom's kingdom, and there was given to it rulership indeed. We know Alexander the Great's kingdom was very, very great, and even in the time of Jesus, the common language was still Greek, even during the Roman period. After this, verse 7, I kept beholding in the visions of the night, Daniel writes, and see there a fourth beast, fearsome and terrible and unusually strong. Fearsome and terrible and unusually strong. This is the Roman Empire after Alexander the Great. And it had teeth of iron, big ones. It was devouring and crushing, and what was left, it was treading down with its feet. We're going to have no time. No problem. I mean, filling up our time today because we're already running out of it. And this is incredible. And look at this. It was devouring and crushing. It was treading down with its feet what was left over, and it was something different from all the other beasts that were prior to it. And it had 10 horns. It fits the Revelation wild beast that has 10 horns. And I kept on considering the horns. And look, another horn, a small one. And this is, it turns out, we could talk about this particular chapter or even one of the verses of this chapter for like days. But it said here, Britain by 1870 had become the largest empire on earth. This is from the Watchtower. May 2020, the King of the North in the time of the end is the article. And by 1870, it says, Britain had become the largest empire on Earth, and it had the most powerful military force. The empire was pictured as a small horn that vanquished three other horns, France, Spain, and the Netherlands. And it filled the role of the King of the South well into World War I. It filled the role of the King of the South, did Britain. During this same time, the United States of America had become the dominant economic power and was forming a close partnership with Britain. It's incredible. All the parallels. You can also look up the Insight book under Beasts Symbolic. Beasts, Symbolic in the Insight book under the heading Beasts, Symbolic. And the Watchtower, June 15th, 2012, is also referred to here in the article Jehovah's a Revealer of Secrets, that article, June 15th, 2012. And also is another remarkable thing. There's Jehovah reveals what must shortly take place in the same magazine, June 15th, 2012, The Watchtower. How Britain and the United States rise to power is talked about here. Comparing John's vision of Revelation chapter 13 with Daniel's vision here. We're almost out of time. It's incredible. The Ancient of Days sat down. Verse 9. This is apparently, that's Jehovah, of course. We know him as the Ancient of Days. But we keep on reading and we find out in verse 14 that someone like a son of man appeared with the clouds of the heavens. You know, see there it says with the clouds of the heavens, verse 13. Someone like a son of man. And then it says, to him, verse 14, there were given rulership and dignity and kingdom that the peoples, national groups, and languages should all serve even him. His rulership is an indefinitely lasting rulership, little ones, that will not pass away, and his kingdom one that will not be brought to ruin. So Daniel was distressed in verse 15. And these are the four kings in verse 17 that will stand up from the earth, these huge beasts. And the holy ones, verse 18, will receive the kingdom and take possession of the kingdom for time indefinite. Even for time indefinite upon times indefinite. And then he goes on to talk about more about the fourth beast. So there's a lot of information. And the references, when we click on these elements, click on the verse and then click on the element that's fourth to the left, fourth from the left, and you see where these are talked about in the different articles by the Watchtower Society. So that, we have it. That's it. Our time is already up. I can't believe it. It was fantastic, wasn't it? Little children, it's February 16th, 2024 of the Common Era. The time is 22:34 hours Eastern Standard Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. And on my behalf, this is Liv Dusty, and this is Cassie saying bye for now.